Thank you so much for listening to Ice Cold Case. Your support means the world to me as I go through this mentally and emotionally challenging process of solving my dad's murder. As an independent podcast, I have exhausted all of my resources and put everything into finding my dad's killer. We have created a crowdfunding campaign, and I am humbly asking if you are able, please consider donating so that I can continue investigating this case. If that is not within your means, there are free ways to support this show. Please consider following, rating, and reviewing this podcast wherever you are listening and share it with your corners of the world. Any and all forms of support are greatly appreciated. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Previously on Ice Cold Case.
It kind of wakes up some stuff which we might have wanted to forget.
Omar has done nothing but lie.
Somebody organized it.
A lot of theories isn't a good thing.
And we were about to go to court the next morning after Dad's death.
In my career, this case here is one I want to solve.
Someone who didn't know anything that happened identified that Omar knew something.
I saw him several years ago and haven't seen him since.
He used to tell me it all the time that he was going to get killed.
I heard that he was a snitch.
This man died for no reason at all.
Each day since my dad was murdered, I felt the distance between us grow. As my memory started to fade and everything became a blur, I didn't feel a strong connection to my dad like I did when he was alive. But now, as I get closer and closer to the truth of this case, as I learn more about who my dad was, I feel more attached than ever to his memory. And on a deeper level, I feel responsible for his legacy. I laid out all the facts. I told you everything that lies in the police report, what the Belmont County Sheriff's Department thinks happened, and what the local rumors have been saying for 21 years about who killed J.C. McGee. I've been dissecting everything for years. And as I played investigator, I didn't want things to get skewed. I had to look at this objectively, but in a lot of ways, I was already on the outside. I didn't grow up with my dad's side of the family. To me, they were acquaintances at best. And even though I felt a connection to my dad, I still felt like an outsider to the family. That point of view made it easier to push through the conflicting feelings, but the longer I spent diving into this case, the more I realized I wasn't an outsider at all. I was at the center of this. Because of that, I started to feel the weight of the responsibility I held. This had to be detailed, accurate, and objective. But this is my unfiltered episode, the one where I tell you how this has all impacted me and what I really think happened to my dad. I'll be taking into account all the facts, but also adding in a sprinkle of intuition. This is not a court of law, and I'm not outright saying this is 100% what happened, but this is the direction I'm heading in as I try to close this case. So to the people who want me to sit down and shut up because I'm not getting this right, I have one thing to say to you. If I'm wrong, prove it. Let's recap what the police believe happened to my dad. The main storyline in the reports. This was treated as a home invasion gone wrong. At around 6 in the morning, possibly four men wearing masks and gloves entered Pearl Faustin's house, where Pearl Omar and Kim Smith were sleeping. They were carrying shotguns. They threw the three of them on the floor face down and put blankets over them. After pouring rubbing alcohol on them and threatening to light them on fire, they ransacked the house looking for a safe. A safe that allegedly belonged to Richard Faustin, Omar's brother. Richard lived in Columbus, but Kim remembers them specifically asking where Richard's safe was. When they didn't find it, they took Omar outside and went over to my dad's house. They were loud and arguing outside before one of the men with a size 10 shoe kicked in the door. My dad was standing in the doorway, reaching for a gun, when one of the men shot him at point blank range. A single kill shot. Without stealing anything, they ran. Omar ended up down the street at a brake shop where he made his 911 call. A call that raises a lot of questions. Alyssa, my sister, was inside the house where my dad was shot. She was asleep in her room. She ran outside of the living room and found our dad dead on the floor. Alyssa called 911 from inside the house. Kim Smith was still inside the house next door, and she hit the home alarm system, which made its way to the police station. They got three notifications from the home alarm, Alyssa's call, and Omar's call. Eventually, the police used the witness testimony of Omar and Kim to identify Daryl Smith as a suspect. They arrested him and began grand jury proceedings. Confident that they had a trigger man, the Belmont County Prosecutor's Office started forming their case. Unfortunately, any storyline will involve Omar Faustin, as he is the key witness in this. He is the only person that would have seen these guys, spent enough time to identify what they looked like, what they were wearing, their voices, and their getaway car. But he continued to change his story, and doing so on the stand created a problem for the prosecutors. The Belmont County prosecutors didn't feel their case with Omar as their key witness was strong enough to take to trial, so they dropped the charges on Daryl Smith and let him walk. The police file had many other names redacted of people that they never felt they had enough evidence to take to trial. But it's clear, no one thought Daryl was the only person there that day. Now, whether or not Omar had direct involvement, his testimony butchered this case and significantly delayed justice. He could possibly prevent this case from ever getting solved if he doesn't tell the truth. There were rumblings that there was a girl in the house that night. My sister heard it was possibly Tiffany Luft. When the police searched the house, they found women's clothing downstairs that led them to believe it's very likely someone else was there that night. If it was Tiffany Luft, she had a connection to another suspect, Dan Banks. Dan was listed early on in the police report by Omar. Omar said Dan was watching the house and was there that morning. And Dan Banks is a self-proclaimed friend of Rico McGee. Rico is my dad's nephew, but he was in jail at the time of the murder. He was in jail because my dad testified against him in court nearly 12 years earlier. This relationship is complicated. Rico and my dad were close at one point, so my dad being part of the prosecution's case against Rico really upset him. And I think he has hated my dad ever since. There could be a connection between the guys that were there that day and Rico, but the police never looked into this possibility. Another person the police kind of considered early on was Butchie Griffin. He was a recurring character in my dad's story, breaking up my dad's marriage to Alyssa's mom, Barb, and dating Shane's mom, Deneen, at the time of my dad's murder. My dad was actually due in court for the final custody hearing for Shane the day after he was murdered. I never believed that was a coincidence. And the police interviewed Deneen and Butchie because of that association. What the police didn't really seem to point out was that my dad had also testified against Butchie in a hearing several years earlier that got Butchie some jail time. So the list of reasons Butchie would have wanted my dad dead was very, very long. But for whatever reason, when Butchie said he didn't do it, the police never questioned it further. And Butchie walked without serious consideration as a suspect. Duncan Waits is a name I believe was redacted from the police reports. Multiple people have said he was there, but he has remained radio silent. There were no interviews with him on record, and no one that I spoke to, besides my sister, was willing to discuss him further. But sometimes, silence speaks louder than words. The police files hold some truth, but how much truth is a question I have been trying to answer from day one. Those slices of accuracy will inform the paths to explore to get to the real story. But it's been so long, and there have been moments of silence and moments of subtle rumblings. Over time, names continued to get thrown into the mix. And for the last 21 years, the rumors have grown exponentially. But as it stands, the murder of my dad, John Cornelius McGee, is an ice-cold case. I grew up a fan of true crime, so I assumed getting into the case files and diving deeper into this story would feel exciting. And in the beginning, it kind of was. But when it finally hit me, it hit hard. I wasn't looking at random case files of someone I didn't know or had no attachment to. This was my dad's story, his life, who he really was. And it was all according to people who had no connection to him at all. I spend a lot of time introspectively thinking about what my life will mean when I'm gone. To know that for my dad, his legacy is now tied to a murder, a cold case, sends me into a spiral. This is all people will talk about when they talk about J.C. McGee. Any accolade or fond memory or story will always be paired with a note about his murder. That's how it all ended for him. And that's what will be said for as long as people talk about him. With that in mind, justice was the only way to make that legacy mean something. Naturally, I have leaned on humor, and that helped me work through this. I usually talk about my dad, even the dark parts of this story, with a smile, and will throw in a joke to keep things light so that I don't make other people, or myself, feel too uncomfortable. But you can't shove these emotions down for forever. And after a while, I started to feel the weight of it all. I wasn't just looking into what happened. I started this podcast, which required me to call people out and do deep investigative work. Along the way, I burned some bridges. I told parts of this story that people thought I would never find, and I went to lengths that people thought I would never go. It's been interesting to read the comments online. many people have a lot of varying opinions about how I have handled this. It's been hard to hear the thoughts of people who don't know me at all. And to be honest, I'm exhausted. I didn't want to do this, and I shouldn't have to. But if I want to know what happened to JC McGee, if I want to know who killed my dad, what other option did I have? My family keeps calling me out, saying I got it all wrong, but they never offered up any other information. What was the right way to do this? How do you solve your dad's murder? I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to it, but this was a very difficult, yet seemingly necessary way to do it. The emotional side and my close connection to the dark details of this case are hard to ignore, but I finally formed a solid opinion that incorporates the facts, but also logic and common sense. I pushed through the guilt and the shame and the sadness and the anger, and I formed my own theory of what happened that day, who was involved, and why they did it.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know, there's a lot of different angles to this because there's a lot of people that did not like JC.
Rico probably had more to do with this than Omar.
There's a paper trail and all that stuff, or there should be.
But they was looking for Bay, which is Richard. That's what they called him. They was looking for his safe with money.
Is Butchie Griffin listed in that? I know Tone is, but... Is Tone Butchie Griffin?
I don't think those reports ever say who Tone is.
Solving this will not bring JC back, and it could possibly impact other family members.
Here's what I loosely think happened to my dad on July 11th, 2002. The circumstances and people surrounding the murder. This is all based on my research, interviews I conducted, witness testimony I read, and tips that have come in. Now, I recognize that this could not be 100% accurate and want you to know that this is just my very educated guess. I am not the judge, jury, and executioner. I'm not convicting anyone. Just coming to a conclusion based on what I know, and hoping that it leads to the truth. I believe that my dad was the target of an orchestrated plan with one purpose, to kill him. With the amount of power, money, and access Rico had from jail, the only thing that makes sense to me is that Rico offered a significant amount of money to anyone who would kill my dad. He was the only person locked up for life because of my dad's testimony. Everyone else only got a few years, and with their criminal history, a lot of them were used to that. Daryl Smith has been in and out of jail, so it wouldn't make sense that his grudge against my dad would be so strong that he would want to kill him over a few years behind bars. But money is motivating. And if you tie in the fact that my dad was an enemy of Daryl Smith, it would be more appealing to take the job. I believe Richard and Dwight were aware of what was going on and the implications it could have on the family. And it was their job to mitigate the risk of anyone suspecting the family was involved. They were related to Rico, so their connection to him could be more obvious. And because I can't find any record of Rico being in federal prison for the 20 plus years he was in, I am having a hard time locating any communication records. Who visited him? Who called him? How often? Transcripts of those conversations? This is where I think the police, at potentially a federal level, are protecting Rico and those records for reasons I still don't know. I'm going to stop saying the guys when referring to who broke into Pearl and Omar's house and start using the names of the people I believe were there. But again, this is my educated guess. I believe Daryl and Duncan were there that night, and when they broke into Pearl's house, they referenced Richard's safe. I believe that Kim and Pearl were not aware of what was going on in order to make this feel real to them so that their statements would feel authentic. But it's interesting that they not only referenced Richard's safe, but called Richard by his nickname, Bay. They knew him. And since the safe was not there, it's an easy out to go next door. I think the safe was not there on purpose. And I think Richard knew to move it. In the timeline, when Omar goes outside with Daryl and Duncan and Tone, who is more than likely Butchie, based on the Belmont County prosecutor's slip-up, I think that they went to my dad's house and used Omar to lure my dad to the door without a gun. The size of the shoe print that kicked in the door was a size 10, and I've been told by family members that Omar wears around a 10 and a half shoe. This is why I believe my dad didn't grab a gun on his way to the door, where he would have passed several. And it wasn't until he approached the doorway that I think he heard other voices and was reaching for the shotgun by the front door. But by then, it was too late. I don't believe that Omar killed my dad. I think he either was blindly following along or thought the intention was not to kill my dad. I think that's part of the reason why he's so flustered still to this day and why his story constantly changes. He didn't realize what he was really going to be a part of. But at the end of the day, he was still there. I also believe Dan Banks was there. Omar names him when he was first brought into the police station. And Dan's connection to Tiffany Luft is incredibly suspicious. If Tiffany, the mother of Dan Banks's baby, was inside my dad's house as a distraction, Dan's involvement seems obvious. Butchie and Deneen's motive is clear, but their logistical involvement is harder to comprehend. Even then, it's possible that Deneen was the woman in the house that morning, and Butchie said it himself, he really hated my dad. His involvement, or lack thereof, is a piece to this puzzle that I am still actively trying to prove. But as far as the murder goes, there was only one gunshot. So there could only be one person who pulled the trigger. And as it stands right now, my best guess, based on the police files, all the witness testimony, and everything I gathered as I did my own investigation into my dad's murder, is that Daryl Smith or Duncan Waits pulled the trigger and killed my dad. Daryl Smith is the obvious choice because he went to grand jury. And even the officials in Belmont County at the time thought they had their guy. Daryl has been in and out of jail since my dad's murder. Even right now, as I record this, he's serving a 7-year sentence for drug-related crimes. His criminal record and known anger issues make him a prime suspect. But is it ever really the obvious choice? Duncan Waits has kept things a little cleaner. He's friends with my dad's friends. He still lives in the area and has been seen since the release of this show out and about in the town. It's chilling to imagine that he's just living his life so casually if he did in fact kill my dad. But why wouldn't he? No one was looking for the killer. Until now. You want to know what I think happened to my dad, and I really want to tell you with certainty. But I want to be accurate, and I want it to be undeniably true. I believe I am a lot closer to that than I have ever been before, but I'm not quite there yet. So that's what I think. There's family members that definitely know more than they are saying. And I think for that, they should be held accountable. But when it comes to the murder, I don't think that most, if any of them, were part of a plan to kill my dad. But once they realized that they held valuable information, they started to squirm. And that is where our morals divide us. They don't see it as necessary to come forward. Maybe they are afraid. Or maybe they are considering the consequences. I think there are people associated with this case that have gotten off really easy. And I believe that Daryl Smith, Duncan Waits, Butchie Griffin, and Dan Banks all should be re-examined and questioned for their possible association with my dad's murder. I think they should have to prove their alibis and give a strong argument for why it couldn't have been them. Now that I'm getting closer and feel like I'm on the right track, there's still a lot that needs to be done to bring justice to my dad in a court of law. Mainly, I need evidence. I'm not sure there will ever be enough physical evidence to test DNA that could prove someone was there. But I'm hopeful that the Belmont County Sheriff's Department searches through everything they have to see what is available to them. The other option is identifying a witness testimony that is accurate and engaging enough that also aligns with what the police already know and can be used to convict someone. I recognize that this case may not ever be solved in court for reasons that are completely out of my control. But something that is in my control, telling my side of the story and putting pressure on the officials in Belmont County, Ohio, to go as far as they can with what they have. As of right now, I am not confident that they can say that. So now I need your help to put that pressure on the Belmont County Sheriff's Department and the Belmont County Prosecutor's Office to take a closer look. Revisit some of their findings and see if there is something new, even in this podcast, that they could explore. Without this pressure, there is no system of checks and balances to hold these offices accountable. I started this podcast because over the last 10 years, I've witnessed the power of social media and digital content in the true crime space. Cold cases are getting solved. Missing people are being found. And information is spreading quickly, all because of public interest. I've listened to so many true crime podcasts, watched nearly every documentary, And after years of wondering how I could get anyone to care about my dad, this is where I landed. This is not just a show to me. This is my life. The raw emotion you feel listening, I am feeling tenfold. But I knew that even if I didn't want to do this, I had to do this. There was no other option. If I could make a show that was compelling and well-produced, you might pay attention. And if you've made it this far, I think it worked. I tried to put this case into the world several times. I would post on the anniversary of my dad's murder, his birthday, holidays, trying to get anyone to care. But here we are. Now people are listening. And now they are talking. I am hopeful that with the power of social media, the true crime fans out in the world, and the resources I've laid out for you, the real work can begin. If you have shared any true crime story online, you have been part of a unique form of investigative work. Cold cases are getting solved on TikTok. And to you, those are strangers. You don't know the in-depth details of the case. You don't know them at all. And more often than not, the cases that go viral are not from underrepresented communities. No one should have to suffer the murder of a relative or a friend while also having to deal with the conflict that their case is not solved. It adds an emotionally taxing layer that makes it incredibly difficult to grieve. It's unsettling, and there is no hope for resolution when it feels like no one cares. I took on the heavy responsibility of showing you every personal detail of my own life and my dad's to make a very clear point. There is no such thing as a perfect victim. There should be no justification for why we care more about certain victims than others. You saw my dad in his many roles: a loving father, a drug dealer, a friend, a brother, a confidential informant, a shady businessman, a son, a human. There's real people involved in these stories that we fixate on. And there's angles that you don't see in a documentary or a TikTok or a podcast. I did whatever it took to get you to care that my dad was murdered and it's completely unsolved. No answers, no closure, no justice. I broke down those walls to show you everything. Because to me, it doesn't get more personal than this. And now, I need you. Help me solve my dad's murder. Ice Cold Case is brought to you by Yes. It's written and produced by Madison McGee. Also produced by Jeremy Bembo. Recorded by Danny Sellers. Mixed by Cody Campbell. Our music is by Matt Bettinson, with creative direction by AJ Christensen.